Welcome to the Lucky Titan Podcast. Here you will learn how to fill your favorite platform with tons of your dream customers from some of the world's top entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Josh Tapp. Now let's get started. What is up, everybody? Josh Tapp here again. Welcome back to the Lucky Titan. Today we're here with Hillary Johnson. You will all remember her from our episode, like, what, 2 years ago, Hillary? It's been quite a while.
At least, yes.
Hillary was actually one of our first guests on the show. You know, when we started this one, we had, I want to say, like 50 guests that were all referrals from Josh Steinle. I believe you know Josh Steinle, yeah?
I don't know. Now you're asking me that, I'm not sure.
I know. Now I'm going to put her on the spot. I can't remember who connected us, but somebody connected us. Yeah. They sent me like 50 guests and Hillary was one of those. And I was like, man, these are all rock stars. So I'm excited to have you back in because I really want to talk through your pivot, right? Because we talked about this pre-interview of how, you know, for you, you were already planning on pivoting out of the event space, which is funny because you kind of pivoted out of it into a different type of event. It almost seems like.
Fair point. Yeah, we'll get to that. Yeah.
So go ahead and hop in and kind of give us a little bit of synopsis of what's been happening the last little bit.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, so Hatch Tribe, my company, you know, we work primarily with women entrepreneurs. And really the intention is to create opportunities for entrepreneurs to connect and to grow. And we started by doing in-person events. At the time, I was living in Charleston, South Carolina, and you know, we were doing networking events, mornings like coffee gatherings and talking about business, or you know, evenings over happy hour. And it was something that was truly formative for our business. I mean, there's no question Hatch Tribe would not be where it is today without having had that experience. But after doing those for a couple of years, I really started thinking, is this the pathway that we want to use moving forward to continue to grow and scale the business? And so we actually tested doing in-person events in other cities. And by design, it was meant to be a test. Like, we'll set it up and see what works and if we like it and if we don't. And we ran it for a year. And I was like, I don't like this. I don't want to do it. I don't like the work stream it's created. It's not how I see myself in the future growing this business. And so pre-pandemic, we were already in the mode of scaling out of that. We were pulling out of doing those in-person events and we're starting to just, you know, slowly over time, just diminish it until they went away. And then, well, as everyone knows, you know, March of 2020, things changed. And then we were like, okay, cool. So we'll just not do those for a while. And then we just never brought them back. So it, you know, it was an easy way to get out of it. We were already thinking of it, but it fundamentally changed like the core offering that we had with the company.
Yeah. Well, and it's cool because, and I mentioned this to you, but like a lot of the people I've been interviewing recently, you know, they've had to make some big pivots, but
yeah.
To me, yours doesn't really feel like a huge pivot in a sense, because like, I mean, it was from events to events, but you're doing more of your own events and the way that you're doing them is so much more unique and honestly, probably much more fulfilling for you because of the nature of what you're doing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I will say, I think that what happened, like everyone else, you know, we shifted everything online. And so, you know, right. At the time we had a membership site, we had boatloads of courses. I was doing coaching with business owners. I was running masterminds and all of it went online. And I will say the one beautiful thing that came from that, which is very much in alignment with our values and with our intentions, was to build a global audience. And we were able to do that very naturally. And, you know, don't get me wrong, it took intention around our efforts to be able to do that. But during that time where we were shut down, you know, from being in person in any way, shape or form, we were like, great, let's get really intentional about how we build relationships with people outside of the US and really expand our reach into other countries and do good work. And, you know, we did, like everybody else, you know, we had to make adjustments and make it work, but, you know, it did. You have to make it work or you just change. And that's kind of the nature of the beast as a business owner.
Right. Yeah. And I think that what's interesting is to watch people when they try to launch a business, they take a year trying to get all the logos and everything in place. But by the time you're there, it's like, it's time to pivot already, right? You should be like, for us, we undercut our employees like every 6 months with this huge pivot or structural change or something that they're like, oh my gosh, I'm surprised they don't hate working for us. But it's such an interesting thing though, that like the way that you talked about, you know, is there's kind of a natural progression to it. And a lot of times I feel like the market just pulls you in the right direction, but then there's kind of these outliers, like you are a unicorn, right? Where it's like, how on earth did you grow a following that quickly of paying followers, I guess is what I would call it. Because everybody comes to us like, oh, I want to be a coach or a mastermind owner or whatnot. And you and I both know it's pretty difficult to get people to actually lay down cash for coaching. So what's the secret, Bill?
No, God, I wish I could say it was one thing. I mean, I think if I can connect two thoughts to this, one is like, when you initially said, you know, sometimes business owners will work on their logo and all of these things for so long that by the time they get it out to the market, they have to change it. And I will say that's one thing that we've done well is just bring things to market. You know, right. So we don't spend a whole lot of time overworking the strategy. So when I think about it, I'm like, you know, your strategy is really important because otherwise you're wasting time, energy, money, resources, period. But to me, strategy should be about 10 to 15% of my time.
Yeah.
The rest of the time really needs to be in that execution and implementation as a company. And so, you know, we think about things, but then we move on them and we throw a lot of stuff at the wall. So when you ask like, what's the secret? I'm like, well, it's testing everything. You know, so if we have an idea, we're like, all right, let's give it a go and let's see what happens. And then at the end, we look and see, did we get results from it or did we not? And I think because we've had a very community-centric type of organization, you know, we've just valued hearing from our audience a lot. And that's been in person, it's been at events, it's been online, it's been on our social media. It's really creating much more of a two-way conversation than a one-way. And so as it relates to coaching, of course, I have expertise, but I also don't have every answer. Right. I don't purport to. And I think that that's some of the magic as a coach is what you co-create with your clients. And so if you're running a playbook, you're really not co-creating. For me, when I'm working with clients, it's very much listening and understanding them and deeply and then co-creating what they need. And so I think we brought that, you know, as our spirit, you know, to everything that we do. And I think people have felt valued by that. So instead of feeling like they're being told they're doing something wrong or told they're doing something right, it's like, I'm actually being appreciated for both. And, and that's important. You know, like all those things you think you're screwing up are actually the most powerful things, because if you really listen and you watch it, they teach you. And then it teaches you to run a better business. And you know, like, you know what you need to do more often than not. You just need some help getting there.
Actually, the validation usually.
Yes.
That makes me wonder though, is like, do you sell first and then build? Is that kind of your methodology?
Oh, 100%. That's
kind of what we do.
Hell yeah. And I teach my clients to do the same. I'm like, let me get you about 20% of the way there. Let me make sure you have like a decent sales story and then go sell the shit out of it. And then, you know, if you sell it, great. If you don't, then like, let's go retool it and don't build it before they come. Jesus, no. Not in the online space. It's insane.
Yeah. And I was just curious about that because I'm glad you coach your people on that, because I need to work better with the people we talk to, because they're our clients. You know, we work with a lot of podcasters and they're sitting here going, oh my gosh, so what equipment should I have? How should my studio be set up? How should I do all this? I'm like, open your freaking phone, call somebody and record it. That's a podcast. The end.
That's it.
Or just record yourself on voice memos. And people, you know, it's this overthinking process when the truth is nobody even cares until there's money involved. It's so curious to me to see like that you pre-sell it and then you take time to build it. I have found too, and it's kind of kind of plays on what you were saying too, where you were saying, you know, it's communicating with your audience and really talking with them more. And we found that the only way to do that is to sell to them first. And then they'll start telling you, well, why isn't this in the offer? Or why do you even have this? We don't even use that, you know? And like for us, that's why we always beta everything. We're in the middle of one of these right now. This is why I say this is literally right before this call, it's like the fourth person who's told me, why isn't this in this offer? And I'm like, well, I'm going to go put it in the offer then. Why not? You know, not going to cost us that much more. So anyways, what you were saying really kind of keyed that thought to me. And I look at a lot of the people listening to this show and they're probably saying, okay, what if I'm like terrified to actually launch it? And I know this is kind of things you specialize in. So how do you help people work through that to where it's like, just launch?
Yeah. You know, truthfully, what sits on the other side of that for many of us is perfection, right? So it's a desire to get things right. And frankly, the older you get, like I'm 42, I work with clients all over the age gamut. But when I work with older business owners, oftentimes we're already really good at what we do. And so sometimes it is terrifying to put out something new because you're having to come back to it with like a novice's eye, and you're putting yourself out there in a way where you're not strong yet. And it's like, do I really need to go back in time and like go back to when I was super green and not know how to do things? And it's such a rare emotion for many business owners, the more established they are. And so I think that it's watching and really understanding the reason why someone's not putting it out there. And most of the time it's like, there's some fear of failure. There's fear of judgment. There's like, I'm trying to get it perfect. I want it to be just right. And so, you know, to me, when I'm listening to that, I'm like, all right, let's just get to the smallest step. So I pull them all the way back and ask them to think of one thing. Okay, what's the next thing we need to do? And I don't let them think about anything else. And I table it all, you know, so it's like, we're only going to think about like the next one to two things. And then we're going to leave everything else down the line, just because we're not there yet. You're robbing the moment now and focused on the future in like a really unproductive way.
Yeah.
So to me, that's the key, is like, just come back. What's the next logical step? Let's do only that step. Let's get you feeling really good about that step. And then it's going to feed itself into the next one. So it's not like zero to launch. Like there's like maybe 10 steps between there. So let's just do like step number 7. All right. Let's go.
I can do that. Yeah.
Take
the funny thing is, I feel like they always get caught on the first step. So it's good to have somebody like you to sit here and be like, okay, skip step one. Let's move to step two. Yeah. Don't be concerned about step one, right?
If it's sometimes.
I'm curious on this one too. And I know we don't have a ton of time today to talk. So I want to ask this question, is that, you know, when you're building a company and like picking a product and building an offer, a lot of times people will come at it from, I'm just going to go as cheap as possible. And like everybody goes like Walmart strategy. That's how I feel like, I'm going to be the best bargain. How do you, cause I know you do this, like, how do you help people get to where the value leader, not the price leader?
Yeah. Oh, this is a tricky widget. Cause you know, like when you started talking about this, I was thinking actually about how we buy, because oftentimes that mentality is showing up in how they're buying things for their business as well. So it's like, well, I need to just find like the cheapest person who can help me do this, or I'm just trying to find the cheapest thing for X, Y, and Z. And so on one hand, they're trying to save money, right? So they're being like, you know, I want to say scrupulous, but that might not be the right word, but it's like they're scrutinizing every dollar they're spending. Exactly. Let's say that. And they're being quote unquote smart about that. So there is some value to that, but sometimes it gets projected to the other side. And because they've had in their mind, like save, 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 then they don't think someone else will spend because they can't imagine themselves doing it either.
Right.
So I do think we have to decouple a little bit of that. And you know, in fairness, not everybody is your customer. So if they do not have the money to do X, Y, or Z with you, they are not your customer. Move on. Because there's somebody else who is. So like when people apply to work with me as a coach and I tell them what it's going to cost, there are some people who go like, whoa, you mean, and then they'll ask a question about the rate or whatever. And then I'm like, yeah. And they're like, oh yeah, I don't know that I'm going to be able to do that. And I don't hard sell. I never have done this. I'm like, you need to feel really confident about us working together. And right. If you're not confident about the price, then go on. But as soon as I let them go, another client shows up. That's exactly what I want. Right. They have the money. They're stoked to pay it. They're like, that's exactly what I was thinking. And I'm like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
So it just let it go. Like offer the high ticket thing because you know, you can do it and you can deliver on the promise of it, and then go do it. And if somebody's not buying it, they're probably not your customer.
Right.
Move on.
Yeah.
And most people aren't. I mean, to be clear, the more expensive your offer gets, you're going to have fewer buying people above you that can actually afford it. And that's okay.
But it's really funny to me because we coach a lot of people on how to like sell straight from their podcast, right? Like sell to their guests or whatnot. Yeah. And they end up, it's this battle in their mind of like, well, how the heck am I supposed to sell to somebody who's that wealthy? Or how do I get in the door with someone that wealthy? I say, well, start a podcast. That's how you get in the door with wealthy people. But the second thing is, why would they not pay $50,000 for something if you're actually providing real value, right? Because we end up running into, I just had a call about this earlier today. It's been a long day, lots of calls. Right? But I was like, why aren't you selling this for $50,000? And they're like, $50,000. Yeah. $50,000. I know people who spend that all the time on this. It was for a retreat type situation, like what you guys do. But for the level of players, I mean, they have like pro NBA players, MLB player coming into this thing. And they're like, not willing to charge $50,000. I'm like, you're just devaluating it by not making people pay enough to show out to this. Anyways, I digress. But what was so interesting about it is that there's that mentality barrier of, well, I wouldn't pay that. Right.
Of course.
Breaking that is, I always tell people, Mike, well, if you wouldn't pay it, go pay it so that you can then say, I would pay for it.
100%.
So that you can break that mentality. I do the same thing all the time. I'm like, I don't even want this, but I'm going to pay you 30 grand because I need to break that barrier for myself.
Yeah. I 100% agree with that. I've had people apply to work with me that have said, you know, and they often are coaches and they'll say, you know, this is what I want to charge. And then I'm like, well, have you ever paid that yourself, you know, to work with a coach or blah, blah, blah. And the answer is no. And I'm like, well, okay. You know, and then it's like, when we see the money issue show up mentally, then it's like, that's almost always it. They can't imagine it because they haven't done it. And again, it's not to be like frivolous with your money, but it's like, if you're going to charge it, you really got to know the space.
Yeah.
You got to be willing to do that work for yourself and, you know, experience that transformation and then know that it's possible that there are people out there who are going to buy it. And there generally are. I mean, as long as you're quite good at what you do and you can deliver, you're going to find an audience.
Yeah, 100%. And I love that too, because, you know, I think the mentality of a lot of people is they try to sell to people like them a lot of times.
Yeah.
And it's new entrepreneurs. I feel like I did it. Everybody does it. It's like, hey, I'm a new entrepreneur. You know, new entrepreneurs really need to know this XYZ thing. So I'm going to sell to them. And you're like, okay, but you won't spend money. They're not going to spend money, right? I love working with new entrepreneurs. I hate having to charge them because they don't do it. They won't put the money down, right? And the people who will succeed. So it's just interesting. So like your business is built off of helping people break that barrier. So I'm excited to see how you guys keep growing the Hatch Tribe that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are coming up to the end of the interview here. So I do want to ask you just a couple questions. So why retreats? What's so special about a retreat over like a mastermind or something else?
Yeah. I mean, to get back to your earlier point, I mean, we went away from in-person events and then 2 years later, we're like, let's do them, but in a different way. And, you know, a pivot that we've taken, but, you know, for what we find is that, you know, when we're in the presence of other really successful business owners, it just causes us all to level up in such an interesting way. And the things that you have been, you know, perhaps worrying that it's only you who's experiencing X, Y, or Z in your business, you're suddenly in the presence of like 10 or 12 other women entrepreneurs who are going, oh yeah, dude, me too. Like been there, and then you're like, oh, nothing's wrong with me. And like, there's such a blessing and a gift in that, but also it's like the development of relationships and bonding with others just over unstructured time is such a gift. And, you know, most of us are really good at working, but if you asked many of my entrepreneur friends what they do for fun, they're like, yeah, what? Like hobbies, what do you mean?
Yeah.
So they're like, you know, between running their business and potentially taking care of their family and all these other things, they're like, you know, I don't take a lot of time for myself. And so what we sought to do with retreats is make them a combination of work and fun. And we do every time. So it's like, there's always something thrown in our agenda every day that is designed to have nothing to do with work, but really allowed to just like get you out of your usual routine and like have some fun with other amazing business owners. And so, yeah, we just, the bonding in person is incredible.
So are these female only?
Yeah, right now. Josh, well,
days. Make it unisex, I'll come. Cause I'm like, I don't know if I want to come get my nails painted or whatever you're doing.
We don't paint our nails.
Okay. That sounded extremely sexist to me. I don't know why that came out.
It's okay. I'm going to allow it.
My wife went to a retreat and it was like a spa day. And so anyways,
which is great.
But yeah, sounds like something I'd love to be a part of. I love the retreats because of what you said, right? It's that camaraderie you get from playing with each other instead of always working with each other. And it is funny to me, like how most entrepreneurs like have zero other hobbies. I'm a pretty hobby. I love learning new things, right? And I'm always trying new different things. And I'll go to these masterminds. A lot of time, these people are like, I can't remember the last time I tried something new. Like that is sad.
There's a bias towards learning and education in many cases, but it's towards things that are business related. So it's like, yeah, just took this course on, you know, whatever, or like I'm working on public speaking skills. And you're like, yeah, great. More things for your job. Instead of like, you know, oh, I've been woodworking, which like may have nothing to do with your work. So finding something out of your lane, I think is important for the brain. So.
Yeah. My wife called me on this about 2 years ago. She's like, I started an MBA program for fun. I was like, I want to learn that side of business. And she's like, you're psychotic. Why would you do this for fun? And I'm like, I don't know. It just sounds entertaining. But 2 years ago, she's like, you need to start discovering new things. And I recently just learned how to do the Rubik's Cube. Cause I was like,
There you go.
I've always wanted to do that. And it didn't cost me anything. It was like, hey, I'm just going to watch YouTube videos so I figure out, and I can do a freaking Rubik's Cube now. Look at me go, right? Mm-hmm. And but it's things like that, though, that people just don't think about. Like, you can absolutely make time for those things. And I think a retreat is an excellent place to do so, especially if you're the type of person who feels like it has to be a work-related expense or something.
Right.
Go do these retreats. They're awesome.
Yeah, it's still tax deductible. It's still a work trip. So,
you right, know, exactly.
For what it's worth.
Awesome. I love it. Well, can you let our audience know where they need to reach out to you?
Yeah, of course. You can go to our website at hatchtribe.com. And of course, all the socials, we're at Hatch Tribe. And then if you want to hang out with me, I'm on Instagram very rarely, but occasionally at Hillary PJ. Oh, no, I changed it. Hillary P. Johnson. That's what
nice. Yeah. So make sure you go check those out. Hatchtribe.com will be the best place to kind of kick that off. Mm-hmm. And Hillary, can you give our audience one final parting piece of guidance?
Yes. I would say don't be afraid to go against the grain. You know, there are a lot of people out there espousing what they believe is the right way to build a business or the right way to grow or the right way to scale. And you've got to know you. You know, you are a unique human, a unique business owner. And yes, there are things that tie together virtually all successful businesses, but build it in your way, do it in your way. You know, you get one life and you might as well live it. And your business is such a big part of that. So listen to yourself, listen to your intuition and your gut and build your business your way. Tune out the rest.
I hope that you enjoyed this episode of the Lucky Titan Podcast. If you learned anything from this or any other episode, make sure you rate it and share it with another entrepreneur it could help. Thanks again, and I'll catch you on the flip side.